Hello, and this is Mike Harbath with this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. Welcome. I'd like to welcome my partner, Ryan Barnett, to the call. Ryan?
Hey, good morning, Mike. Today we're going to be talking a bit about recurring and reoccurring revenue and how it's important on the evaluation and process for selling your business. So with that, just want to start out with a quick definition of what recurring means. And this is almost straight Webster, but I just want to talk about recurring being something that is happens over and over again, possibly at regular interviews, compared to reoccurring, which is something that simply happens again, but not necessarily repeatedly. So perhaps not in that recurring type interval. So with Mike, I'll just hand it over to you. You know, if you were to define recurring revenue, and what are some examples of where you see recurring revenue at?
Yeah, absolutely. So we see recurring revenue, common areas in managed service providers, infrastructure managed service providers that provide, their services to their clients through usually a multi-year contract or an evergreen type contract that auto renews. That is recurring. It's a monthly recurring charge that allows them to provide a service level to their client. It's not tied to billable hours typically. It's not tied to bucket of hours. It's a service level. And so defining a service level and what you provide and making it available is important for most recurring contracts. There's also recurring type contracts in, you know, custom application development shops and what we'll call application implementers. Those are the three broad categories of service type IT services companies that we work with. They usually do that through a maintenance and support type offering. So if you're a custom dev guy and you've developed software and you're now implementing it for you're managing it and maintaining it for your client, in some cases, and in many cases, you may own that IP and you may lease it back to the client. That is recurring revenue. That's a long-term contract where it's recurring. You're maintaining and supporting that that software or providing access based on the same charge as a service level every month over a long-tail contract. Application implementers, folks that implement Salesforce or Microsoft Dynamics or Business Central or other applications, can do the same thing. It again has to do with a sort of a service level combination of either maintenance and support or enhancement type work. But it's contracted over a long period of time, usually years, not months. And it is the same kind of charge every month and deployed as a service level. Hopefully that covers it for you, Ryan.
Sure. So if I was to, perhaps lay a few examples here for you. So a software company who has a monthly subscription rate, it sounds pretty clear that's recurring revenue. If you're a reseller and you are selling a software to a company, say like bundled software from a security provider, and that every year there's a contract comes up, and every year a company renews that contract, is that repeat revenue or is that recurring revenue?
Well, that would be more repeat revenue or reoccurring revenue. So that's not necessarily recurring revenue. Now, it in many ways depends on how it's contracted, but I think the best way to think about it is if this is a service that you provide as an IT service provider, and it's not a reseller type relationship, but it's something that in essence you manufacture. You either manage it through your call center, or you're managing it with a group of staff, and it's a repeat billing that occurs every month over a period of years, and it's recurring. If it's the latter that you just pointed out, it's reoccurring.
Okay. And just to be even more nuanced here, if a custom application developer, or let's say, or even an integrator. And let's think about an integrator, perhaps in the human capital management space, who's dealing with software that is often updated. So every quarter, oftentimes, commission plans are updated. And with commission plan updates come updates within the software. And tell me, too, you know, what ways could someone in a services provider, how could you deal with that in two different ways? Is there a way for a provider to have a managed services type contract to make it recurring revenue? Or is that simply going to be repeat type business?
No, absolutely there is. If you were to say, like, for example, we'll handle all of the modifications to the, a particular module or the services modifications to that module due to updates in the software that occur every quarter for a flat monthly fee or a flat quarterly fee, then that's considered recurring revenue, right? Because if an update happens, the client is going to pay. If an update doesn't happen, the client is still going to pay. I like to use the analogy for recurring revenue. It's sort of like a cable TV subscription or cable TV contract. You know, you're going to pay your cable bill whether you watch TV or not, because it's a service level. They're providing those channels to your television so that when you pick up the remote and push the button, you're going to be able to watch them. That's similar to recurring, right? You get billed whether you use it or not. Same thing in a recurring contract. You get billed whether the client uses a service or not. It's a service level that's available to them. So as a, implementer, for example, you could certainly create a service level type contract that says, hey, anything that occurs within the scope of this service level over this period of time, we will manage. And for that, you're going to pay us this monthly fee or quarterly or annual fee. And many of the, our best clients and most mature providers that do really all the things, infrastructure or custom software or implementers, have built very robust service level agreements with their clients and have, converted much of their revenue to that type of recurring type revenue.
Yeah, so we oftentimes will suggest a pay per sprint type model. And Mike, can you explain that and how that might fit in this context? And then alternatively, and then kind of flow into why it's important to have something that is recurring and even repeat in nature.
Right. So pay per sprint is an interesting model in its own right because it becomes recurring because the same amount of money is spent per sprint, if you will. And it's just what varies is the number of sprints. So let's say you were to estimate a certain level of effort over a period of 6 months or a year for a client. You're going to do work within the sprints. And that work that occurs inside of that sprint, we're using the Agile methodology here, will be done for, let's just pick a number, $10,000. And that happens every 2 weeks. So you're billing the client $20,000 a month. And in that situation, you do a certain amount of work. Now, that is a service level, right? That's not a billable hours thing. It's typically not a, the milestone, the measurement is that we are providing the service level within this sprint to get this stuff done over this period of time. Now, you may not get certain things done, particularly if it's due to a delay at the client or some sort of a challenge that occurs with the technology or the software you might be working on. And in that situation, that work then moves to the next sprint, okay? But the client is paying the same amount of money for that sprint. So in essence, that becomes recurring revenue. That recurring revenue is based on either the number of sprints or number of months. Some people, attribute a sprint to a month. It's not uncommon to attribute a sprint to a two-week period of time. So you have two sprints per month. But based on that definition, it is a service level, and because it's a service level, it's recurring revenue.
Right. That makes total sense. And if companies come from a project-based background or even a staffing type background where it's you're writing a contract for a certain amount of time and has an end date, this doesn't necessarily have that end date. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You're going to have an estimate of how many sprints it takes, but it's not going to be a, you know, for example, a client might say, yeah, we're going to just keep going along with these sprints and keep doing work that we need done forever. You know, they may need other enhancements. You might discover some more work along the way. We have many clients that have started to work with their clients or work with those clients in that method. The sprints continue to get larger because they continue to add staff and require more, a higher service level. It's the best way to think about it. And because they do that, the contracts and the consumption get larger over time. And paper sprint models or service level agreement models tend to do that when you're working with a client. And it's a great way if you've traditionally been a project-oriented shop that implements something or builds something for their client within the confines of the technology for which you're an expert. To convert their business to one that has a much more stable revenue and profit stream, and one that aligns more closely with the client and their ability to have flexibility in the contract and either, you know, make it larger or smaller, but continue to work together towards the ultimate end goal, which is for them to either develop or implement or really use and maintain the software and services that you provide them.
Sure. And from if we look at it from an investor standpoint, why is recurring revenue important? And what kind of thresholds are you seeing today? If you're looking at a deal, is recurring revenue starting to become a requirement for getting a deal done? I'd love your take to see strategic buyer versus a financial or where does recurring revenue play in valuations and getting and moving things forward in a acquisition or transaction?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question because we've seen a trend towards particularly financial buyers or PE-funded strategics that want a minimum amount of recurring revenue. And that minimum amount is typically 50 to 60% of recurring revenue before they will pay attention. And the primary reason for that is for a financial buyer in particular, who may or may not be an operator in our industry, that de-risks the deal for them because it's a, hey, we have these long tail contracts. We're going to provide, you're going to provide those services, if you will. And if you were selling your business in the transition, it makes it easier to transition versus if you're predominantly a project-based shop, you got to resell all of your revenue and then some every year in order to make your number. And so it's a simple calculation about risk that has to do with, hey, if you only have to resell half of your book of business every year to kind of stay at the same revenue level or a little more, that's a whole lot easier than, having to resell the entire amount of revenue. And the eyes and minds of a buyer, particularly a financial buyer, that's pretty darn important. And I think it's why it generally constitutes a higher multiple from a M&A transaction perspective, or it's given a higher weighting, if you will, in the valuation because of the stability of that recurring revenue. Now, I'll also add that reoccurring or repeat revenue, we like to use those terms interchangeably, should but not be ignored either. I mean, there's certainly plenty of firms that have lots of very sticky relationships with clients where, it's not technically a service level, but it is repeat. And the repeat is continues to, expand what we'll call kind of a land and expand strategy with a client. Maybe that client's buying more from you this year than they did last year or the year before. There's been a long-term, multi-year, in some cases, decade type relationship with a client that could certainly allow you to have repeat revenue that's considered very reliable But I think in the eyes and minds of a, if you will, or the eyes and minds of a financial buyer, they certainly would prefer a very high percentage of recurring revenue.
Right. And it seems like financial buyers, they have their own definitions and playbooks with it. And a strategic buyer, perhaps, let's say, a consulting firm buying another consulting firm, is used to how non-repeat business works, and they're able to generate it. When we look at our own product sets or product offerings, and we suggest to clients, we really suggest that a client have a wedge offering that gets them in the door. That wedge offering leads to kind of their core offerings, but those core offerings ultimately lead to some kind of sustainment or outsourced offerings, and which ultimately lead to some kind of advisory services. And in a way, if we were to give some pieces of advice for selling, clients need to have some kind of way to have that advisory or ways to generate repeat business on a consistent way. So if it's not in a managed services type contract in a pay-per-sprint model, then it should at least be driven by a quarterly business review that's outlining what work is being done in the quarter, and that you're consistently consulting and selling into a client, so you eventually do have a repeat business. I think one thing that we look at every customer we have is take a look at your contracts that you had for the last three years, and if you can have north of 90% of your customers coming back year after year after year, that's going to lead to a higher valuation as well. And the reason why is reduced selling costs. You've got reduced risk in the contracts and client churn. And if you likely have done for 3 years, you've spent similar amounts of money, it's not unlikely that you're going to spend differently. So I think all those lead to a better valuation.
Yeah, another comment on this point, you know, we've had a lot of clients over the years be very successful at converting their repeat customers to recurring customers. And they've done that really by looking at the purchasing history with the client and crafting a strategy in which you can create a service level. So let's assume they've had a bucket of hours relationship or a project relationship over time. Now, let's exclude some of the reseller components here, but you know, just looking at the services orientation, services business, you can begin to say, why don't we package this service as more of a subscription, right? And we will be consistent around the work, and then, you know, it's contingent upon you then as the provider to look at the work every quarter to make sure it's sized properly, that subscription is working for all parties. And if it's not, you've got to be bringing it to your client in your quarterly business review to say, yeah, I know we sort of fixed this monthly subscription at this level, but now you need to change it because you need more or you need less. And clients are very willing to do that. And it's much easier to interface both with you and with the client if, you know, your invoices aren't swinging all over the place. You know, 1 month you have a bunch of hours or time or a big, you know, load on the work together. The next month you don't have much, and you know that's tough to manage as a firm, but it's also difficult for your client to manage as well, because you know they have to budget for these expenditures. They have to make sure that they understand the timing of them. And by smoothing those out, it's much easier to have a better relationship with the client over time. And the only real added overhead for you is just to make sure that you're sizing that subscription properly quarter to quarter, so that you don't get stuck with doing a lot of work that you're not getting paid for.
Sure. That makes a ton of sense. Can you talk a little bit about how a company, let's say either a security company or someone who's selling a lot of hardware, the difference between in valuations that hardware sale versus a service revenue, And is there ways that you can move either of those kind of hardware, software to kind of more recurring? And in addition, and feel free to take this however you want, but what's the impact that some of the cloud programs that are out there, for example, Microsoft got their CSP program, what opportunities are there for perhaps someone who's traditionally sold software resale for them to really jump into more of a recurring method with something like a CSP?
Yeah, sure, certainly. So a couple things, you know, I think on reseller revenue, traditional reseller revenue, we've seen all kinds of creative solutions around procurement as a service. If it's really procurement per se, you know, you can get some enhancement around procurement as a service and begin to bundle services that make it easier to interface with the client and provide an underlying recurring contract that supports that procurement and ultimately gets them what they need. And whether that be for configuration, you know, ahead of time, or customization if it's software, you know, or configuration, if you will, there's lots of ways to turn that into more of a recurring service. Even though at the crux of it, it is a product resale sort of inflection point. I think beyond that, though, you know, there's certainly also ways to get the recurring revenue of the streams associated with cloud services. If you're reselling cloud services, that's pretty sticky stuff. And I think the best clients we have been able to wrapper that in more of their own services, because, you know, just providing the cloud service, and I think this is probably the best example here is inside of a infrastructure managed service provider. If you're providing, you know, for example, Microsoft's Microsoft 365, and you're getting a, you know, CSP, if you will, override or commission on that, that certainly is recurring revenue. But what's more important is kind of how you value and look at the revenue associated with your own services that wrapper that. So creating a service level around, you know, how to deal with a help desk, for example, if someone's using the Office Suite or using, you know, mail and inside of Microsoft 365 and they have a problem with their local Outlook client, you know, how you field those trouble tickets and how you, you know, do that work. That's a cornerstone of what all MSPs or infrastructure managed service providers do. And I think there's a lot of learned lessons there for other types of services companies, such as, you know, software developers and, you know, app implementation businesses, whether it be cloud-based or premise-based, that, you know, those guys can glean from how they tend to wrapper other types of technology with their services in a subscription and provide that subscription to their client, make it easy to buy. I think all of those things are worth investigating, and certainly it will enhance your valuation by moving more and more of your revenue to recurring.
Right, right. And just kind of last question here and wrapping this up, I mean, what's the best way for a client to report on this recurring revenue? Like, what are ways to prove it, to show that this is sticky and less cost associated with it, less risk associated with it? What's the best way for a client just to prove that, you know, this truly is kind of that recurring revenue?
Well, I think, you know, the contracts themselves are probably the best way to show it. I mean, it comes back to the service level test. You know, is it really a service level subscription? Or is it something else? Is there some other measurement increment? Are there hours that are incremented or work streams that are incremented? You know, the truest way to prove it is that it is a service level. And the biggest distinction there is that whether the client uses that service level or not, they're paying for it, right? And I want to be clear about that. I'll just say it again, whether or not the client is using the service level, they're paying for it. And it's contingent upon you as their vendor to make sure that there's a good value exchange there. and that they're getting enough value from the relationship and that it's sized properly that it will continue. Not just that you have a multi-year contract, because, you know, I don't know, you know, how many of our clients are in the business of suing their clients if they attempt to terminate a contract, you know, early. I don't know very many businesses that go about doing that successfully and stay successful businesses for long. So it's not as if a client can't ultimately get out of a contract. What's more important is that the contract does exist and that you're servicing the client and you're having open, transparent communications about the value exchange they're getting from that subscription. Because you can't just bill a client for nothing, right? Well, over time, the client's going to say, no, I'm not going to continue to pay for your service level if you're not meeting my expectations of service. Just like you wouldn't continue to pay your cable bill if you went on and, you know, half of the channels didn't work that you were paying for. You'd say, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to do that. I'm not getting the service level that I subscribe to. And so it's important to be able to, you know, show that these contracts are service level oriented, and that's the ultimate test.
Great. That's all I have for you today. Anything else you want to include?
No. I think with that, we'll tie a ribbon on this week's podcast. Again, you can find more information on this topic on our website at revenuerocket.com. And if you have any specific questions, feel free to drop us a note at info@revenuerocket.com, and we'll get right back to you. Hope you tune in next week.